So welcome to the second ever episode of The Craft, the podcast about teaching, learning, and school. I'm Leif Gustafson, your host, and I am incredibly fortunate to have Amy Lafty here with me. Amy Lafty, who is an English teacher teaching in the Archdiocese in Philadelphia, but also we go way back, don't we? Can we consider it way back?
Way back.
How far back do we go?
2010, maybe?
2010.
Maybe a little bit earlier than that.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay, and because I had a chance to work with you in the classroom, mm-hmm. two classes, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so this podcast is all about capturing the stories of teachers and talking about what they're doing in the classroom, the things that are on their mind, how they got into teaching, and all that kind of stuff. And Amy definitely has an interesting story in terms of that. But so, Amy, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, tell us how you got into teaching, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
Okay, so when I was an undergrad, I just was so ready to get out and teach, but I was majoring in English and I had no education classes whatsoever. And, you know, I kind of looked into the schools where I could work while being in the process of getting my certification and just kind of went at it. So it was a real baptism by fire to just kind of start and have no background in in education classes. Mm. So I started out, like you said, with Archdiocese in 2006 and...
Right from your undergrad?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I'm sorry. There was a year in between where I was waitressing.
Okay. That's always good preparation for teaching.
Exactly. Lots of people yelling at you. So, I was a long-term sub at the first school. And I got a call from another school in the middle of that job and interviewed, and I was hired that day. So I went from one school on a Friday to the next school on a Monday with zero time to prep. So everything was always kind of, you know, last minute and just really putting stuff together. Mm-hmm. And then the next school, I had maybe 2 weeks in between, so still really no chance to prep. And I was there for a semester. And then,
the first school you were there for how long?
A little over a month.
You were there for a month.
Yeah.
And then they moved you to another school?
When the other teacher came back.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yes.
And so then you were at your second school for how long?
For about a month. Yeah.
In another kind of long-term sub position?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then moved to the next school for a semester as a long-term sub.
That's like real like stability.
Yeah. And every single opportunity, they were 99% sure that the teacher wasn't coming back and this is probably going to be your job and got really attached to the kids and and friends and, you know, colleagues, and then would find out at the last minute, you know, this person who is like 900 years old is coming back. So, you know, I was constantly getting the boot. But then I went
How would they tell you that you were moving? Like, can you like paint that picture for us? Like, were you called into the office?
And yeah, it was just a very casual, you know, we've really enjoyed having you here and the kids love you, but the teacher is coming back. In the first case, it was a maternity leave. She wasn't sure if she wanted to come back or not and did. In the second case, it was someone who was suffering from some kind of an illness and decided that she wanted to be back. And then in the third case, it was...
She's 900 years old.
Oh, he was
or he, 900, 900 years, years old.
And, you know...
Deserves to be back.
Yeah, something like that. So, and then I finally, you know, I went all summer and I didn't have a job. And then I finally, 2 weeks before the next school year was starting, I got a call.
Of course. Yeah.
And I interviewed and they hired me that day. And, you know, so I had 2 weeks to prep for an entire year. Mm. And I was there all year.
Same grades from your first, second, third. And this is your fourth position now, right?
This is like my sixth.
Your sixth. Well, I mean, you're in the story that you're telling right now. We're at your fourth teaching job. Okay.
Teaching position.
And all the same grade or?
No. So the first two were freshmen and sophomores. Mm. The third one, all freshmen. I had 180-something freshmen.
Oof,
it was ridiculous.
Wow.
And then the fourth one was all seniors.
So you're really kind of jumping all over the place also in terms of grades.
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
So I spent I spent 2 years there.
Both, this might have been the time that I got, that we met.
I think so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And both, well, in between those 2 years, my job was on the line. They were worried about me getting bumped out for someone with higher seniority, and I was saved at the end. So I spent 2 years there, and then I got constricted again.
Constricted.
Yes.
I like that term.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fancy. It's a fancy way of saying you don't have a job anymore.
It's also vaguely reptilian.
Yes.
You know, snake, you know, you've been constricted.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And the meeting, the constriction meeting is like you're sitting right next to the person who's just going to stand up and raise their hand and say, well, I'm going to take her job. So right off of the smart board. So
Wait. Okay, tell that. Wait, okay, so tell that so I can picture it.
I don't want to get in trouble.
there's kind of
just this really large meeting
for
all of the teachers who find out that they're either getting bumped or constricted.
Okay.
And you, all of the jobs are up on a smart board. And so you're 21st
century technology.
Exactly.
Okay.
So you're sitting there and you're looking at your job up on the board and, you know, they call a list of people based on seniority.
Yep.
You know, and you're just waiting to see your job taken off the board, you know.
Wow.
So in some awkward cases, that person is sitting right next to you and you've been talking to them for 15 minutes before the meeting starts and then they walk away with your job. So
is that what happened to you?
She was maybe like 3 or 4 rows in front of me. But yeah, so it's awkward. It's really awkward.
Yes.
Yes. And then you're watching other people leave who are like crying or, you know, it's awful. It's really awful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's how your fourth position ended.
Right. So I spent 2 years at that school.
Okay.
And then I spent a year at a school also for the Archdiocese, but it was an hour away from home.
Oof.
So that was really rough.
Yeah.
And a month into that job, the previous school called me and said, you can have your job back. And at that point, I wanted to come back to it because it was so close to home.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls, I had juniors that second year, and they really wanted to continue into senior year with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just so – I was settled at that point, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I don't want to go through this again. I don't want to move everything, and I don't want to go through this.
Yeah.
So I stayed there for a year, and then I got constricted. So I'm right back to where I was, you know, for those 2 years, and this is – my second year back, and we'll probably find out in the next few weeks who's constricted.
And so. And what you've told me before, too, is that because you're jumping around, you're not gaining seniority? Is that true?
I'm gaining seniority, but there's a difference between system seniority and school seniority.
Okay.
So I still remain the lowest in my department as far as seniority goes.
Okay.
So if someone has to go and it's in the English department, it will be me.
And are you hearing rumblings about that?
I know they're saying that the constriction numbers this year will be low, but I'm always a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hmm. Okay. And so you're back at the job that you were at when you were there for 2 years.
Right.
And you're teaching what grades?
Right now, I have 4 sections of seniors and 1 section of sophomores.
So does this mean that you're actually back in the classroom with some of the students that you were with when you were there before? Or no, is that not a possibility?
The seniors that I have now were freshmen the last time I was
there. So you weren't teaching them?
No.
So
I remember some of their faces, but I didn't really know
them. All right, because that would have been kind of wild too, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, but another really kind of important change has happened to you because of your baby, who's not a baby right now. I mean, you were telling me before the show that River is already 11 months old, which kind of blew my mind. Mm. But I thought it would be kind of interesting to talk for just a few minutes about what it's like to have a young child and to be teaching. We were talking together, walking up to the studio about how you don't really hear a lot about that. And so what is it like?
Really impossible. It's really, really difficult. I mean, I think the most difficult thing is having to come home and bring all of that work home with you and having all of these grades to do and meeting deadlines and making really meaningful lessons while you have a child who is pressing keys on the computer and, you know, screaming. And of course, I want to give all of my time in the world to him. So trying to be a really good mom and trying to be a really good teacher, it's really difficult.
What are some strategies or coping mechanisms that you're finding? Have you, what's changed from, say, when River was 2 months old?
Yeah, well, it was always really easy to just put him, you know, like right on the couch next to me, and he would just smile and fall asleep, and, you know, I could do stuff. And just pretty much in the last 2 months, he's on the go and he's active, and the idea of sitting still is not a possibility. So really the only strategy I have right now is Baby Einstein. Mm-hmm. That's like his favorite. So if I really genuinely want to get any work done and I'm the only one home, then I will put him in his high chair and he will watch Baby Einstein and I will hurry up and get some work done. And then as soon as it's over, he's ready to go. Mm-hmm. So, or, you know, I just have to wait until he naps. This week, for example, my mom is our main babysitter. And then I have two friends who watch him on Thursday and Friday. So my mom is injured. And we kind of found out at the last minute that she wouldn't be here this week. And then my other one of my other babysitters is in Disney World. So we were really frantic last weekend kind of, you know, what are we going to do? So we kind of – everybody was taking off last week. My nephew was taking off. I was taking – everybody was taking off to watch River. And then yesterday he came to work with me.
I was going to ask you if he has come to work with you.
Yeah. So
how did that go?
Well, the seniors luckily were off for prom. So I only had one class to teach yesterday. I had some other teachers carry in his caravan of stuff and set up his pack and play in the classroom and his walker and all of this stuff and put Baby Einstein on the smart board. And
So like the big screen.
Yeah. So for the most part, he was fine, but he would not nap. So he was getting really miserable, increasingly miserable throughout the day. And everybody kept coming in my classroom because, you know, they want to see the cute baby.
Yes, and I'm like,
oh, my gosh, please go away. So, you know, I have my sophomores at fifth period, and one of the other teachers offered to take him for a walk. So, and the girls were so sad that he wasn't going this day. So he went for a walk.
Yeah. Oh, and we didn't actually talk about, is it an all-girls school?
Yes.
It is. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, and how did the... I mean, it sounds like the teachers and the students really received the idea of you bringing River to school really well and kind of embraced it.
Yeah.
How did the school as a whole, the administration, what did they think about it?
Well, the teachers were wonderful, and the students, I mean, when I told them that we were going through this and I don't know what I'm going to do, and so many people immediately jumped in and said, like, well, I'll take him at third, or, you know, even the girls were like, well, I'll come up at my lunch and I'll sit with them and I'll walk down the hallway with him. And, you know, so many of them have babysitting jobs.
Yes.
So they were really wonderful about it and really supportive.
Yeah.
The administration definitely, they're supportive, but at the same time, we're having the same problem for this upcoming week. And there's no way that, you know, all these people can take off again to watch him. So they would kind of rather me take off than bring him in, which I don't want to do, especially since I have so little time left with my seniors. So I don't really know how that's going to go this week. We'll see.
Well, it's only Saturday.
Yes.
You know, there's plenty of time to.
Yes.
Yeah, we have a faculty member who has a young baby, and she brings her in on a pretty regular basis, and I think it's great. And the baby comes to meetings, and you know, and hangs out and rolls around, and I just think it's important for us to be able to embrace that idea, and you know, find a way to not only just make it work, but realize that it actually makes things better, you know, I mean, on so many different levels.
Right. I also think it's really good for the girls to see that, okay, you know, Mrs. Lafty is struggling with this. She's going to figure it out and she's going to do what she needs to do. I think that that's really important for them to see.
And also seeing what it's like to have a young child and a job. But then also this sense that, like, I can be a part of solving this.
Right.
Right? And it's kind of interesting to think about this kind of a situation being part of what it means to be in school or to be in a community.
That
this is part of it. And there's rich learning that can come out of this. And I mean, the relationships strengthen because mm-hmm. of it. It can't but help probably right. the learning situation, you know, right. in the class, in mm-hmm. the classroom.
And I've had to bring him to parent-teacher conferences also. Mm-hmm. And I know the administration was a little bit worried about that, but I think it was good for parents to see that I'm doing my best to balance
yeah.
140 students and my 11-month-year-old. So
yeah. How did the parents?
They were great. They were, yeah. you know, if anything, it made my night a little bit easier because I guess they were less inclined to yell at me. but, you know, they were, yeah, they were really great about it.
Uh-huh.
You know?
So. Uh-huh. Cool. Well, so let's just take a break for a sec and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about creativity and stuff that you've been thinking about creativity, and also get a sense of or hear you talk a little bit about something that you're doing with your students right now that's really interesting.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
So, folks, are you bobbing your head right now to the music? Because I know that I am. That's Perrin and Tonic. I want to give a shout out to Perrin and Tonic. He does all the music for our podcast, and he's just an amazing DJ, an amazing musician. You can check out all of his stuff on SoundCloud. You can download it. You can use it at your next party. You can make it the soundtrack for your next trip across the country, whatever. But get some of Perrin Tonic's stuff. Totally worth listening to. I also want to make sure that you go to www.writingbasedcurriculum.com. That's where you can find all my blog and all my posts on teaching, learning in school, and in particular, what it means to have a writing-based curriculum in your classroom. So once again, that's www.writingbasedcurriculum.com. Check it out. And now, back to the podcast.
I'm just trying to visualize it in my head. Did they have their works of art and they were presenting those?
Right. Or? So they had to come up in front of the room and they were holding their piece for the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to explain first. They had to give the rest of the girls a summary of their passage.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to explain why they chose the lines that they chose out of that passage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was it that really stood out about those lines mm-hmm. to them? And then they had to go through their drawing and explain to the class how each part of their drawing mm-hmm. related to the lines that they chose. And then they had to explain how their drawing portrayed the theme that they were working on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what were some things about that you thought were really great? Like, or what did you notice when they were presenting?
Mm-hmm.
Anything surprise you?
Well, what I really liked to hear was that while they were – I mean, I saw this happening, but I'm happy that they said it in front of the other girls. You know, a lot of – it led them to do research.
Mm-hmm.
So they – again, they laugh at this, but we have this thing where they know if they raise their hands during certain class sessions that I'm not going to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of this big joke, but they know that – generally, if it's something they're going to ask me, that it's something they can go and do the research with on their own. So a lot of them were kind of saying, well, you know, I was really stuck on this line, so I looked this up. Or, you know, one girl actually ended up just falling in love with the text. And she asked her aunt if she could order the whole book for her. And she brought it in, and it had a ton of footnotes in it, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, give me that, you know? So it was kind of going around the classroom and really kind of opening up certain lines that they didn't understand and really added to their pieces. Yeah.
You're making me think about, again, like the sign of a really good project, right, is when it ignites a student to do something like, you know, to do something like that, right, to
right.
go out and get the book and bring it in. To share, and that had you done that yourself,
mm-hmm.
it probably would not have had the same impact.
Right.
Would it have? Like, if you had kind of designed it in, like, so on one day, like, okay, so now here's the book with all these footnotes.
Right.
It probably wouldn't have had the same kind of energy
right.
as the student saying, you know, hey, look, I got this. And,
mm-hmm.
and
It makes me think about, again, I guess, maybe the importance of creating learning opportunities that allow for these kinds of things to happen. That,
right.
that if we plan things too carefully and too closely, that if we're in like complete control of them, this is kind of part of creativity too, I think, right?
Yeah.
That those kinds of serendipitous moments mm-hmm. where probably a lot of learning really happens wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think you really, as a teacher, you really have to let go. And I know they teach you that in school, and I know it's really hard for teachers, but you do. You have mm-hmm. to kind of just coach and be kind of on the outskirts of the classroom and just kind of watch and listen. And they know that if they run into, like, a real problem that I'm going to help them. But I'm really trying to emphasize that self-directed learning.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm. How do you make it so that you let go of that control?
I don't know. Good question.
Do you still have a hard time letting go of control?
Honestly, and I feel like crap saying this, but it really depends on the class.
Mm, okay.
Because they've been the most difficult in trying to break them down and say, don't worry about the end until we get there, you know? So I'd like to say that it was the most difficult to kind of be on the outskirts and let them do their thing. But I don't know. They kind of really, as much as they kind of may have resisted it in the beginning, they really kind of embraced all of the projects that I've given them. Mm. So I think that they're getting to the point where they've done a few, so they realize that it's probably going to end up being something really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely have other classes where if I'm not in there and kind of right there having them do things, then they are too busy talking about their weekends or
mm-hmm.
talking about prom. So
it's a big thing right now, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it is.
In those kind of situations, how do you work on letting go of control in those kinds of situations, in those kinds of classes where you're feeling the impulse to kind of be in the middle and I mean, do you work on letting go of control in those kinds of situations? How do you do it?
It's really difficult. It's really, really difficult because internally I'm like, oh, you know, they're not doing what they need to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and this is particularly in some of my classes are so large. You know, I'm working with 30,
how large?
33, 34 girls at a time.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think the only way that I've been able to deal with it at this point is I just try to focus on the groups who really are doing really good work and what they need to be doing, and you know, so I'll kind of go over to them and talk with them a little bit more and try to put more energy behind them. I don't really have any strategies yet. That's so hard for me because you know, I used to get really upset and spend all of this time trying to force these other girls who maybe didn't have that much energy in the project, and I used to kind of hover over them. And that's not really doing anything mm-hmm. because it's not generating any real energy on their part.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I used to really focus on that. And then the girls who were doing really awesome work on the other side of the classroom, I was kind of avoiding them. So now I just try to focus on those girls. And
what do you see happening when you do that? So I hear you kind of talking about focusing on the positive energy that's happening.
Right.
What happens when you do that for the class as a whole?
Well, I mean, it certainly produces better work from the girls who were already trying so hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on certain occasions, the other ones who maybe weren't working so hard kind of stop and listen. Or maybe, I don't know what's going on in their minds. Maybe they're thinking like, well, why is she spending so much time over there? Why is she kind of leaving us, you know, to sit here and talk about prom? You know, and I think they kind of start to realize that they either start looking at the clock or they start to realize like, we better start doing something here, you know? But I also notice that when they do kind of quiet down and look at what I'm talking about with other girls, they hear other really good ideas. So then I will sometimes kind of hear them say like, oh, you know, that's really decent. Or, you know, like they'll get up and come over and look at what I'm doing with the other girls. So
it is kind of attracts attention.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. And I kind of an unrelated note, just wondering about what's the biggest change that you see in yourself as a teacher when you think from your first year to now?
I think I just have a lot more confidence in, well, you know, I had to go through the whole process of letting things be a mess first, too, because I was always really scared of that and, you know, worried about what the administration would say and what about my department chair would say and, you know, letting the standards kind of scare me. And, you know, so I had to go through that process of, you know, let me kind of make a mess of this stuff. And, you know, if this project, if I put a whole lot of work into this project this year and it didn't work out, then I won't do it next year. Then I'll alter it. So I think I've just become a much more reflective teacher. And I find myself writing things down as they're doing things in the classroom. I find myself writing things down immediately, like, okay, this isn't working, or this needs to be fixed for even tomorrow. So I think I'm just a lot more reflective and a lot more confident in, okay, if this one doesn't work out, then how can we either change it or just completely take it off the table?
Do you find yourself doing more of taking things off the table or changing them?
That's hard to say because I don't like to do the same thing every year. So I will maybe not take them off the table, but just incorporate certain elements of certain projects into completely new ones. You know, kind of take the things that worked best about a certain project and turn it into something completely different. And with all of the bouncing around I've done, I'm not teaching the same thing every year. So with my seniors this year, it's a modern American lit course. I've never taught that. You know what I mean? I've done a ton of it in college in my own classes, but that kind of forced me to work with some of the projects.
We're coming up on the end of the year, and I think something that teachers are always thinking about is how do you make the end of the year meaningful? And you were saying before the podcast that the end of the year is basically December for seniors. Which is even, I think, more obviously then more of a challenge, like that last semester. How do you, you know, how do you make it meaningful? So I'm just wondering if you have some thoughts about that.
Yeah. Well, I'm stuck right in the middle of it as we speak. I don't know how much this will work out or how much I can – I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. They are so drawn to projects that have some kind of personal element. So any chance they get to talk about themselves is will hold their attention. So, for example, the last few weeks have been absolutely brutal with prom coming up. So prom was yesterday, and that's just been a nightmare. So
why is prom
a
nightmare?
You know, it's the biggest night in your life. I mean, what is more important than prom?
So was that the biggest night of your life?
Absolutely not. No. You know, at the time, I'm sure it was. But looking back, it's just, you know.
Yeah, it really wasn't the biggest night of my life either.
No.
Yeah.
So.
But in the moment.
In the moment.
It's pretty darn important.
It's everything.
Okay.
So, you know, and I said that to one of my students the other day when we were, because every day last week they came in and they were like, can we please just not do work? Can you please just let us do something fun? And I would say, why? And they, well, I really just need to think about prom. And, like, they're dead serious. And I'm like, what do you need to think about?
Did you ask them that?
Oh, yeah. Well, they think that I am by far the most sarcastic person they've ever met. So they think that I'm not sensitive and that I have no emotions and I don't cry. And they were all kind of making fun of, you know, they were like, well, you know, in your prom picture, you probably weren't even smiling. So, you know, we have that kind of relationship. So
well, so what do they need to think about about prom?
Oh, my Lord. Just kind of those last minute, what do I want to smile with teeth in my picture or do I not want to? So what should I pack to wear or, you know, after prom events?
Oh.
Yeah, it's so much more important than graduating. So so much more important. You know, for example, we're having a test next week. On Tuesday, we're having a test.
That's good that you're not having it on Monday.
Exactly.
That's very good. In fact, that should be like a rule, actually.
I know.
No tests on Monday.
Yeah. And I rarely give tests. I mean, most of my stuff is project-based.
Well, that's what I'm hearing, like, as we're talking. Yeah. You're really kind of – you've moved into this idea of projects really being the engine for the learning. Yeah.
And even the test we're doing on Tuesday is mostly written. So the one girl said – I really am not going to have the mental capacity to take that test on Tuesday. And I said, why not? And she said, because we have prom. And I said, but prom's on Friday. So why can you still not take this test on Tuesday? And she was like, well, you know, I'm going to be gone all weekend. And then Monday, I'm just going to be recovering. And don't expect me to do anything in your class on Monday. And then Tuesday, you know, I'm just not going to be ready yet. So it's a really hard. It's hard to fight that.
Dang, there's prom is wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's some serious stuff.
So
5 days. 5 days to recover.
Yeah, and then as soon as they do recover from that, then it will just be all about graduation parties.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because mm-hmm. then there will be this discussion of, well, your party can't be on the same day as my party. And so that will kind of take precedence over
right.
anything that we're learning.
Right.
But getting back to making their projects more personal, we just finished doing exercises and style.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they just turned in their flash fiction work. And for the most part, I really didn't get any resistance with it.
There's something about short fiction.
Yeah. They really yeah. enjoyed it. And one of the main goals while we were doing this, of course, they saw it as a creative project. They were like, well, this is creative
there
and this
again,
isn't
creative.
Real writing. Yeah.
yeah.
But it really.
The students were saying that.
Yeah. Some of them. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
It's not real writing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
yeah.
we're constantly having discussions about writing.
uh-huh.
But what was really cool was they have so many issues with grammar, even as seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, who wants to talk about grammar?
Mm-hmm.
I don't. So it opened up a really good opportunity to talk about grammar. Because
mm-hmm.
as I was looking at all of their drafts and they were kind of workshopping things in class, I was noticing just really simple stuff, like a ton of comma splices, a
mm-hmm.
ton. So.
So are you saying that the different – so just so that folks know, so Exercises in Style is a book written by Raymond Cano.
Yes.
And back in the kind of the mid 20th century, he was a French experimental writer, part of the surrealists, really, and a mathematician.
Yeah.
And so he wrote this book, Exercises in Style, where he wrote the same story 99 different ways.
Yes.
And so what's really cool is that there are several high school English teachers that are doing this project now and seeing how rich it is
yeah.
for high school students to write the same story in as many different ways as they can.
Right.
And so what you're saying here is that when you're writing stories in many different ways, many different styles, it opens up this space for really thinking about structure.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of just walked around and looked at what I felt like a lot of the kind of where they were making these mistakes with grammar. And that wasn't even really my original goal to work that into the lesson. And then I saw that it was there. So I said, okay, you know, we'll mm-hmm. talk about this in the beginning of every class before we get back to work on this. Instead of doing like this really boring grammar lesson where inevitably no one would be paying attention, I would kind of review the skill with them, even though they thought it was the first time they were learning about commas. I would review the skill with them, and then I would say, go to your drafts of
mm-hmm.
flash fiction and find this stuff for me. And it was great because, you know, I would just say, raise your hand when you find this stuff and call me over. And they would call me over and then they would fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like seeing this stuff in their own writing. And grammar was never really the goal, you know,
mm-hmm,
but it just
mm-hmm.
kind of came out of it. And also it really forces them to think about language, which is, you know, more than I can ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
we've been doing this vocab exercise that I stole from the teachingchannel.org.
Uh-huh.
And it's really been working. So I see
that's
them.
That's a cool channel, isn't
yes.
it? That, yeah. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
So they've been really working a lot of those words from the exercise into their stories
nice.
Without me even saying, hey, I'd like you to do this.
Nice.
You know, so.
So they're, yeah, one of the styles could actually be like hyper vocab style,
yeah.
right? Where
yeah.
you just find all of these massive words
right.
that you would usually never use.
Right.
I think he has a version like that maybe in the book.
Well, I gave them
the loquacious style or something. I don't know.
I gave them like 8 or 9 versions.
Uh-huh.
I took like 8 or 9 from the book and I said, I'm going to let you choose from these because, you know, I don't have the books for them.
Right.
So
this is something that I'm hearing you say is that your students are not getting full texts.
No.
Are they?
No.
Or how do you feel about that?
It sucks.
Okay.
Anybody wants to donate?
Oh,
I love
yeah.
that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I gave them like 8 or 9 versions and I allowed them to, you know, they did the notation, which is the first version of their story, and then they were allowed to pick 2 other versions. So, and I was really shocked at some of the ones they were tackling, you know, like some of the ones that in the beginning they were like, oh my gosh, that's too hard. I can't do that. Like the precision. And then a lot
uh-huh.
of them ended up doing it.
Uh-huh.
Some of them were struggling with this, and I met with them. I kind of conferenced with them individually. And I said, you know, what seems to be the real problem here? And most of them said, well, there's really nothing personal in this for me. So I said, well, why don't we change your notation? So the choices for their notation could be something that happened throughout your day, something that happened at work or school, or, you know, what happened when you woke up this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they all involve them, but that was not personal enough for them.
Okay.
So I said, well, how about we change your notations to...
They wrote about prom.
No. Oh, my gosh. You just made me think about all the ones I have to grade and how I'm going to see a million stories about prom. Now I'm scared. I said, why don't you choose, like, a really significant memory in your life and make that your notation and then turn it into all of these other pieces of flash fiction based on his work. And they jumped on that.
Wow.
And they even, you know, even one girl asked me if she could spend her lunch period just sitting in my classroom and writing. And she came up and I said, do you want me to help you? And she was like, honestly, I just want to write. She said, I have some ideas. I want to get them out. And this is like a girl who turns nothing in. So, you know, halfway through the period, I kind of looked over at her and I said, do you need any help? You want me to look at any of that? And she was like, no, I'm on a roll and I just want to keep writing. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Again, like these kinds of projects that open up the door for those kinds of things to happen, right?
Yeah.
So you're thinking about these kinds of projects at the end of the year, helping with that kind of end of year syndrome.
I think they're still writing. They're still thinking about language. They're thinking about structure. Mm-hmm. So what if it's a more personal nature? It's still – they're doing it, and they're doing good stuff.
So before we close – I'd love to hear from you where you'd like to see yourself in 5-10 years in terms of teaching. Can you visualize that? What do you still see yourself in teaching?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be a professor. That was always my biggest goal.
Okay.
So definitely.
Why do you want to be a professor?
This sounds so cheesy, but I know that this is not always the case when you're a professor, but I just really want to be working with students who really want to be there. It's so tiring and it's so draining when you are constantly working with these really large classrooms full of kids who, for the most part, you really have to win them over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's draining,
you
know? And I love it. And at the end of the day, I feel really good about what I do. And there are certainly enough moments where they come back to me or they email me or, you know, I just visited students from the last school that I worked in where I was doing my culminating project for you, which was a creative writing workshop.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to visit them and that was really cool to just... They really couldn't wait for me to get there, and they just finished working on 10,000-word memoirs for the teacher that they have right now.
Uh-huh.
So we were talking about that. But I definitely would like to be in a position where I'm teaching other teachers and talking about this kind of stuff because, you know, I know there's such a big push even in my school to do more project-based learning. And everybody's just so resistant to it, you know, and everybody's kind of in their groove. And we have this rule in the diocese, I think, where you have to have one project a semester. Or I don't even know. I do so many. The rule doesn't matter to me.
A rule.
Yeah. So it's kind of like they get in their one project. I see a lot of poster boards.
Why do you think there's that resistance?
I don't know. People just get into their groove and they want to do their thing. And or maybe, I don't know, maybe they're afraid to make that mess and kind of, you know, see where it takes them. And I'm still afraid of things not working out well, but I'm never going to learn if I don't, you know. I've only been teaching for 7 years and I have so much to learn.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what do you want to get better at?
Everything. Yeah, I don't know. I know that I need to do more work with staying on the outskirts of things. I know that I need to do more work with how do I figure out strategies for the girls who are not really strong with self-directed learning. So that's a real problem for me.
Well, this was great.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy, so much for coming in, and I know River isn't feeling really well,
and so
we wish River well, and thank you for taking this time to to talk. And I think it's great that you're in the classroom. I think it's great that you're teaching. And I want to come and visit.
You are certainly welcome.
And see what's going on.
Yeah.
And so we'll put up on the podcast some of the pictures from
Definitely.
Your project,
mm-hmm.
and we'll hook people to the teaching channel, teachingchannel.org,
yes.
Right? So we can hook people up to that.
And you should put up a link and encourage people to go to Breadloaf.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's yes. Right. We can put a link up to Breadloaf, too. Do you want to give a quick plug about Breadloaf here at
yeah.
the end?
So I wouldn't know anything about Breadloaf if it wasn't for you, because I never knew what it was. But so I'm going into my third summer there to complete a master's in English. And it is just being stuck on a mountain for 6 weeks with no cell phone service in the most gorgeous place ever, mm-hmm. and just being surrounded by a community of people who are all into the same thing that you are into, which creates complete awesome chaos. And the professors there are just so amazing. And I have walked away with so many ideas for my classroom from that place. I am just so grateful for all the learning I've done there and at Arcadia, and it's definitely made me a lot of the teacher that I am. So
we'll put a link up to the Breadloaf School of English too, so folks can check that out. All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
That's a wrap. Second episode of The Craft, the podcast about teaching, learning, and school, is in the bag. I want to thank Amy Lafty so much for coming out on a Saturday when her little boy River is really not feeling well, and sitting with me for a few hours and talking about teaching and learning. I just really appreciate that, and I hope you found the interview as interesting as I did. I also want to hear from you and what you think about the podcast. You can reach me at www.writingbasedcurriculum.com, and there you can get all my recent blogs on teaching and learning and writing with students in particular. There's also an online journal that celebrates the writing of teachers and students. It's called Curved Lines on the Terrestrial Sphere, and you can download that on the website. Thanks again for tuning in. For the teachers out there, best of luck with the end of the year, bringing it to a meaningful and interesting close. Would love to hear any stories from you. You can drop me an email from the website. Stay tuned for the next episode. I'll let you know when it's coming out via Twitter and Facebook, and of course on www.writingbasedcurriculum as well. And between now and then, as always, keep working on your craft.